Chapter 59. Reacher moved in his chair and ran his fingers through his hair and said, "Alan King told me his brother wasn't speaking to him." Sorensen said,
"Did Alan King live in Kansas City?"
"I think so."
"Maybe he didn't. And even if he did, maybe they never met. Kansas City is a big enough place."
"I know," Reacher said. "Metro area population is 1.5 million."
"Is it?"
"Area code is 816.
"Okay."
Reacher said, "So now we have 3 coincidences. 7 months ago, Del Fuenzo moved to the back of beyond in Nebraska, and simultaneously Peter King moved to Kansas City, Missouri, where his brother might or might not have been living, and where his brother might or might not have been even speaking to him. And simultaneously, your Central Region counterterrorism people, who are based in Kansas City, Missouri, decide to start up a complex undercover operation that seems to be centered on a spot very close to Del Fuenzo's new quarters in the back of beyond in Nebraska."
"We can't have 3 coincidences. That's too many."
"I would agree," Reacher said, "theoretically. But we don't have 3 coincidences. We have 2 proven links."
"Proven how?"
Reacher leaned forward in his chair and put his palm on the bed. He pressed down and tested the mattress for softness and yield. He said, "First, Peter King was definitely Alan King's brother. And Alan King was definitely a bad guy, because an undercover FBI agent found it necessary to shoot him in the heart and burn him up in a fire, which is a pretty basic definition for being a bad guy, wouldn't you say?"
"And second?"
Reacher said, "Your SAC had you brought here because you found out about Del Fuenzo's move 7 months ago. And this place is for people who stumble on evidence of undercover operations. Therefore, Del Fuenzo's move was part of an undercover operation."
"What part?"
Reacher said, "Let's go ask her." Reacher stopped short of Del Fuenzo's door, and Sorensen stepped up and knocked softly. There was a long minute's delay, and then there was the rattle of a chain. The door opened a crack on dim light inside, and Del Fuenzo's voice whispered,
"Who is it?"
Reacher figured she was whispering because her kid had just gone to sleep. Sorensen said,
"Karen Del Fuenzo?"
Del Fuenzo whispered,
"Yes."
Sorensen said,
"I'm Julia Sorensen from the FBI field office in Omaha. I was working on getting you back last night."
And then Del Fuenzo shushed her, quite impatiently, like Reacher knew she would, because her 10-year-old had just gotten asleep. Del Fuenzo came out and bustled Sorensen away from the door, like Reacher knew she would, over to a place more than 10 feet away, where it was safe to make a noise.
"I'm sorry,"
Sorensen said.
"I didn't mean to be a nuisance. I just wanted to introduce myself. I just wanted to see you were okay."
"I'm fine,"
Del Fuenzo said. And more than 10 feet behind her, Reacher slipped into the room. He'd been in the room once before, so he was safely familiar with its layout, even in the dark. And it was dark. There was no light anywhere except an orange neon bulb inside a light switch in the bathroom. Its faint glow showed Lucy asleep in the bed farther from the door. She was on her side, fetal, rolled into the blankets. The sheet was up to her chin. Her hair was spilled on the pillow, black on white. Reacher found Del Fuenzo's bag on the other bed, nearer the door, nearer the armchairs. He had seen her lift it off the chair and dump it on the bed. It had looked heavy. And the mattresses were soft and yielding, not like trampolines, not like drum skins. But even so, the bag had bounced, like she still had her bottle of water in it. He stepped slow and quiet on the carpet and carried the bag to the bathroom. He spread a folded bath towel on the vanity counter, one-handed, patting it into place directly under the dim glow from the light switch. He emptied the bag on the towel, a precaution against noise, which worked to some extent, but not completely. There was no loud clattering, but there were plenty of sharp thumps. He waited and listened. Lucy slept on, breathing low and quiet. He raked through the things on the towel. There was all kinds of stuff. Makeup, a hairbrush, 2 plastic combs, a slim glass bottle of scent, 2 packs of gum, both half gone, a wallet containing $3 and no credit cards, and a 7-month-old Nebraska driver's license. It was made out to Del Fuenzo at the address Reacher had visited. She was 41 years old. There was an emery board for her fingernails and a steakhouse toothpick still in its paper wrapper and 71 cents in loose coins and a ballpoint pen and a house key on a chain with a crystal pendant. He saw the pack of aspirins. There was no bottle of water. There was nothing large and heavy except a Bible, a hardcover King James version, smaller than an encyclopedia, bigger than a novel, fairly thick, dark red cardboard on the front, dark red cardboard on the back, gold printing on the spine, gold printing on the front, Holy Bible. It looked like it didn't get much use. It looked like it hadn't been opened very often. In fact, it was impossible to open. The pages were all crinkled and gummed together by some kind of yellowish fluid, dried long ago. Spillage, possibly. Inside the bag. Pineapple juice, maybe, or orange, or grapefruit. Something like that. Something sugary. A small carton with a straw, or a drinking cup for the kid, dumped in there and overturned. So why keep the Bible? Was there a taboo against trashing damaged Bibles and replacing them? Reacher didn't know. He was no kind of a theologian. It was very heavy for a book. He used his nails and tried to separate the front cover from the first endpaper page. Not possible. It was gummed solid, evenly and uniformly. Reacher pictured the spilled juice, pulsing out around the hole for the straw or through the spout of the cup, flooding the bag, soaking the good book evenly and uniformly. Not possible. Spilled juice would leave a random stain, probably large, but it wouldn't cover the whole book equally. Some part of it would be untouched. What got wet would swell, and the rest would stay the same. Richard had seen books in that condition. Frozen pipes, blood stains. Damage was never uniform. He used one of Delfrenzo's combs and forced it end-on between the pages. He slid it up and down and levered it back and forth until he had made 2 fingertip-sized recesses in the pulp. Then he put the book spine down on the vanity counter and bent over and hooked his nails in the recesses and jerked left and right. Paper tore, and the book fell open. Everything from Exodus to Jude had been hollowed out with a razor. A custom-shaped cavity had been created. Very neat work. The cavity was roughly rectangular, maybe 7 inches by 6, maybe 2 inches deep. Not much of the paper had been left at the top and the bottom and the sides of the book, hence the glue. Walls had been built, thin but solid. The whole thing was like a jewelry box with its lid stuck shut. But it contained no jewelry. The cavity was shaped and sized and contoured specifically for its current contents, which were a Glock 19 automatic pistol and an Apple cellular telephone with matching charger and a slim ID wallet. The Glock 19 was a compact version of the familiar Glock 17, 4-inch barrel, smaller and lighter all around, often considered a better fit for a woman's hand, always considered easier to conceal. It was loaded with 18 9mm parabellums, 17 in the magazine and 1 in the chamber, ready to go. No manual safety on a Glock, point and shoot. The phone was switched off, just a blank screen on the front and a shiny black casing on the back with a silver apple, partly bitten. Reacher had no idea how to turn the phone on. There would be a button somewhere, or a combination of buttons to be pressed in sequence or held down for a certain small number of seconds. The charger was a neat white cube, very small, with blades for an outlet, and a long white wire tipped with a complex rectangular plug. The ID wallet was made of fine black leather. Reacher flipped it open. It was like a tiny book in itself. The left-hand page was a colored engraving of a shield. Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Investigation. The right-hand page was a photo ID. Delfrenzo's face was on it. A little pale from the flash, a little green from fluorescent tubes overhead. But it was her. The picture was overlapped with an official seal. Department of Justice again. Holographic. The words Federal Bureau of Investigation ran side to side across the whole width of the card. Special Agent Karen Del Fuenzo. Reacher repacked the cavity and squeezed the covers down over the damage he had caused. He carried the book in his hand, slow and quiet, past the sleeping girl, out through the door, towards the two women still huddled 10 feet away. Sorensen was talking inanely, just burning time, and Del Fuenzo was looking a little exasperated and impatient with her. They both heard the scuff of Reacher's boots on the concrete. They both turned towards him. Reacher raised the Bible and said, "Let us pray."